Hi, and welcome to the Magazine Rack on Chris. I'm Michael Prinz. Today, I'll be reading from Kiplinger Personal Finance. The first article today is written by Sandra Block, titled, When Should You File for Social Security? Applying at age 70 maximizes your monthly payout, but claiming early could provide advantages that can't be quantified on a spreadsheet. This is on page 52. Waiting until age 70 to file for Social Security retirement benefits is one of the most effective ways to reduce the risk that you'll run out of money in your later years. But in some instances, filing for benefits at your full retirement age, known as the FRA, or even earlier, could provide more financial security for you and your family. And some retirees may find that filing early will significantly improve their quality of life. If you're approaching retirement age, or you've retired but haven't filed for Social Security, you've no doubt heard about the advantages of waiting until age 70 to claim your benefits. You can file for benefits as early as age 62, but your monthly payout will be as much as 30% lower than the amount you'll receive if you wait until your full retirement age. FRA is 66 if you were born between 1943 and 1954. It gradually rises to 67 for younger people. Your annual cost of living adjustment, or COLA, will be lower too, because the COLA is based on the amount of your benefit. If you delay starting benefits until after you've reached full retirement age, you'll receive an 8% delayed retirement credit for each year you postpone claiming benefits from that age until age 70. Workers who reach full retirement age at 67, for example, would receive a 24% increase in benefits by waiting until age 70 to file. At www.ssa.gov/OACT/QuickCalc, that's QUICKCALC, Social Security provides a calculator you can use to estimate your benefits based on the year you plan to retire. Yet despite all these advantages, less than 10% of retirees wait until age 70 to claim benefits, and about 30% claim them at 62, according to the Congressional Research Service. In some cases, individuals don't have the luxury of waiting until full retirement age, let alone until age 70, to file for benefits. Although nearly 70% of workers expect to retire at age 65 or older, in reality, only 34% of retirees manage to work that long, according to research by JP Morgan Asset Management. Among those who retired earlier than planned, nearly one-third cited health problems or disabilities, 23% cited corporate downsizing, and 13% said they retired early to take care of a spouse or other family member. When that happens, claiming Social Security, even with the haircut, can provide much-needed financial stability, says Ashton Lawrence, a certified financial planner in Greenville, South Carolina. It's crucial to balance short-term financial needs with the long-term benefits of delayed claiming. Other retirees file for Social Security as early as 62 because they don't expect to live long enough to benefit by waiting. Niv Persaud, a CFP with Transition Planning and Guidance in Atlanta, says one of her clients is in remission after a cancer diagnosis and doesn't have a family history of longevity. Although she understood that waiting until age 70 would increase the size of her benefits, given her ongoing health issues and family history, she preferred claiming her benefit early, Persaud says. As you contemplate claiming strategies, you may have heard about the break-even point, which is the age at which the value of claiming larger benefits for a shorter period, starting at age 70, for example, outweighs the benefit of claiming a smaller payout for a longer period, say by starting at age 62. At age 62. Estimates of these break-even points vary, but an analysis by JP Morgan Asset Management recommends claiming benefits as early as 62 if you don't expect to live past 77. If you expect to live beyond 77, postpone benefits until at least your full retirement age. And if you expect to live beyond age 81, consider waiting until age 70 to file for benefits, the analysis suggests. Married couples should factor in the value of survivor benefits, which we'll discuss later in this story. Most Americans will live past age 77, and many will live into their 80s or beyond. According to the Social Security Administration, a 62-year-old man has a 71% chance of living to at least age 77 and a 58% chance of living to age 81. A 62-year-old woman has at least an 80% chance of living to 77 and a 69% chance of living to 81. And even if your parents died in their 50s or 60s, advances in diagnosis and treatment of common diseases, along with differences in lifestyle, could enable you to live much longer than they did, Persaud says. Strategies for couples. Even if you've concluded that delaying benefits until age 70 is in your best interest, covering expenses in your interim can be a challenge. But if you're married, there's a strategy you can use to bridge the gap. Consider having the lower-earning spouse file for benefits at full retirement age, or even as early as age 62 if necessary. Use the lower-earning spouse's benefits, along with income from other sources, to pay expenses while the higher-earner's benefits, which will get the biggest boost from delayed retirement credits, continues to grow, until the higher-earner turns 70. Margarita Chang, a CFP with Blue Ocean Global Wealth in Potomac, Maryland, worked with a married couple who wanted to provide financial assistance to an aging parent and a disabled sibling. They elected to have the wife, who was the lower earner, file for benefits before she reaches full retirement age, while the husband will wait to file for benefits until at least his full retirement age, or possibly age 70, she says. Having access to funds they can use to help family members provides them with a peace of mind, Chang says. This strategy could also enable married couples to get the most out of their survivor benefits. A surviving spouse who has reached full retirement age is eligible for up to 100% of the deceased spouse's benefits, or if the deceased spouse had not yet filed for benefits, 100% of the amount the deceased spouse would have received had she or he filed. For that reason, it may make sense for the higher earner to delay benefits until age 70, even if he or she doesn't expect to live past 81, in order to preserve the maximum benefit for the surviving spouse. While having the higher earner wait until age 70 to apply for Social Security will increase survivor benefits, it won't affect spousal benefits, which allow the lower earning spouse to receive benefits based on the higher earner's work record. The most a spouse can receive in spousal benefits is 50% of the higher earner's primary insurance amount, which is the amount the spouse is entitled to at full retirement age. Strategies for surviving spouses. If you're a widow or a widower, you can file for survivor benefits as early as age 60. But in that case, the benefits will be reduced by about 29%. If your own benefit will be less than the survivor's benefit, a better strategy is to file for your own benefits at age 62 and switch to survivor benefits when you reach full retirement age, which is when those benefits reach their maximum, says Michelle Gessner, a CFP with Gessner Wealth Strategies in Houston. Survivor benefits aren't eligible for delayed retirement credits, so there's no upside to waiting until age 70. Taking your own benefit at 62 doesn't preclude the survivor's benefit from growing in the background, which is typically not the case with other benefits offered through Social Security, she says. Conversely, if your own benefit will be larger, you could claim survivor benefits as early as 60 and allow your own benefits, which are eligible for delayed credits, to grow until you reach age 70, at which point you could switch to your own benefits. If you're divorced, you're also eligible for survivor benefits as early as age 60 or as early as 50 if you have a disability. If the marriage lasted at least 10 years and you didn't remarry before age 60. If you remarry after you turn 60, it still won't affect survivor benefits. As is the case with surviving widows and widowers who aren't divorced, you can file for your own benefits early and allow your survivor benefits to grow, or vice versa. Strategies for parents of minor children. If you're eligible for Social Security and you have minor children, they may also be eligible for benefits, but only if you're receiving benefits. To qualify for benefits, your child, or children, must be younger than 18, or 19 if still in high school, unless a child is disabled, benefits will stop when he or she turns 18. Or if the child is in high school, benefits will last until the child graduates or 2 months after the child turns 19. Whichever comes first. Dependent grandchildren are also eligible for benefits. Minor children can receive up to half of the amount the parent will receive at full retirement age. In the case of multiple children, Social Security caps the amount a family can receive at 150% to 188% of the parent's FRA benefit. Benefits paid to a minor child won't reduce the amount you're eligible to receive when you file. However, if you start benefits early, at age 62, for example, so that your children will receive payments, your benefits will still be permanently reduced. For that reason, Lawrence says you should weigh your family's immediate financial needs against the increase in your benefits you'd receive by filing later. Strategies for singles. While preserving survivor benefits is an important consideration for married retirees, it's not an issue for singles. If you don't need the income, it still makes sense to wait until you reach full retirement age to file. But waiting until age 70 may be less compelling. One of Prasad's single clients decided to claim at age 67 after learning that she would receive only about $100 a month in additional benefits if she waited until age 70. Filing for benefits helped alleviate stress about her finances, and $100 wasn't going to make or break her, Prasad says. If you have chronic health problems that could affect longevity, claiming benefits at full retirement age or even earlier will provide you with income to enjoy the time you have left. If you're divorced, you can still receive benefits based on your ex-spouse's earnings instead of your own, as long as you were married at least 10 years, you're 62 or older, and you're currently unmarried. As with a regular spousal benefit, you can get up to 50% of an ex-spouse's benefit, but that benefit will be reduced if you claim before your full retirement age. Taking a benefit on your ex-spouse's record has no effect on his or her benefit or the benefit of your ex's current spouse. If your ex qualifies for benefits but has yet to apply, you can still start collecting Social Security based on the ex's record, though you must have been divorced for at least 2 years. Social Security and your investments. Although Social Security will represent a significant and reliable slice of your retirement income, you'll probably have other financial resources such as IRAs or 401k plans, taxable brokerage accounts, and, if you're lucky, a defined benefit pension plan. With that in mind, reviewing Social Security as a component of your overall retirement portfolio can help you determine the optimal time to file for benefits. For example, if you're forced to retire in a year that your portfolio has dropped 15% to 20% and you don't have other sources of funds, filing for Social Security could enable you to avoid taking withdrawals that would lock in those losses, says Andrew Herzog, a CFP with the Watchman Group in Plano, Texas. Though filing early will reduce your benefits, it could also provide enough time for your portfolio to recover before you need to take withdrawals, he says. Another factor to consider is the projected returns for your portfolio and the types of investments you own. For example, filing for Social Security before age 70 could enable you to postpone converting an annuity into a guaranteed income stream, which would result in a higher rate of return, Lawrence says. Some retirees believe returns on their portfolios could outperform the return they'll receive by delaying Social Security, especially if they reinvest their benefits. However, Social Security's annual COLA, combined with the guaranteed 80% annual return for delayed retirement benefits, is a high hurdle to overcome. Outperforming that return would require an aggressive investment strategy and a high tolerance for risk, according to a recent paper by Wade Fow and Steve Parrish in the Journal of Financial Planning. Even then, the authors conclude that based on historical data, it's uncommon for investment returns to beat the implied benefit of delaying Social Security for long-lived retirees. Finally, if you're determined to leave a legacy, filing for benefits before age 70 or even full retirement age could reduce the amount you'll need to withdraw from your savings, thus increasing the amount you'll be able to leave to your heirs. Prasad says her client, who filed early because of a cancer diagnosis, also wants to provide an inheritance for her adult son, and claiming Social Security will allow her to preserve those assets. Filing for Social Security isn't always about maximizing benefits, Chang says. The decision to claim Social Security is as much a personal decision as a financial one. And finally, on the bottom of page 56, we have a KIPP tip. Beware the earnings test. If you opt to file for Social Security benefits before you reach full retirement age and plan to keep working, it's important to understand how earnings from your job could affect your monthly payments. In 2024, if you make more than $22,320, you'll lose $1 in benefits for every $2 you earn over that amount. In the year you reach the full retirement age, you'll give up $1 for every $3 you earn over the certain amount. In 2024, it's $59,520 before your birthday. Starting in the month you receive full retirement age, you can earn as much as you want without worrying about the earnings test. Those benefits aren't lost forever, though. Once you reach full retirement age, your benefit amount will be adjusted to recover what was withheld. Still, if you're planning on working after you retire, it makes sense either to keep your earnings below the limit or delay claiming benefits until you reach full retirement age. Next, on page 58, we have Kim Clark with their article, The Lowdown on Inflation. There are five different types. Here's how to adjust your portfolio for each one. Inflation has caused plenty of angst at grocery stores, lumber yards, and even concert venues over the past 4 years. Back in May of 2020, consumer prices were basically flat compared with a year earlier. By June of 2022, the annual inflation rate had soared to 9.1%, then started cooling so that overall prices in December 2023 were 3.4% higher than the year before. That's close to the 40-year average of 2.9%, but still not ideal. Inflation can wreak havoc with your portfolio, too. Inflation impacts your portfolio in acute and obvious ways, and in more sneaky and nefarious ways, says Wiley Tollett, Chief Investment Officer of Franklin Templeton Investment Solutions and co-author of a 2022 study on which kinds of investment do best in inflationary times. Inflation erodes the value of your investments by reducing their purchasing power, for starters. And when inflation is on the rise, central bankers tend to respond with higher interest rates to cool the economy and put a lid on prices. The Federal Reserve, for example, has hiked its benchmark rate 11 times since March 2022. The 1-2 punch of higher inflation and rising rates sent stocks and bonds reeling, making 2022 the rare year in which both markets tanked. More subtly, inflation rates can also influence overall market valuations, or the prices investors are willing to pay for financial assets. In general, the higher the inflation rate, the less investors are willing to pay for stocks. One rule of thumb states that stocks are overvalued if the average price-earnings ratio for stocks overall is higher than 20 minus the inflation rate. Based on a 2024 expected inflation rate of about 3%, that implies a fair value for the S&P 500 index would be about 17 times expected earnings. As of January 31st, the S&P 500 index traded at a P/E of 21.7, but that's skewed higher by a handful of giant growth stocks. Likewise, investors are generally willing to lock money up in a bond only if they think the bond's interest rate will beat inflation over its lifetime. It's all about the inflation expectations, explains Rob Arnott, founder of the investment firm Research Affiliates. As bad as inflation can be, stagflation, when inflation is rising but the economy is in a rut, can be worse. As can deflation, when widespread, persistently falling prices threaten to destabilize the economy overall. Economists say there are basically five different pricing environments or kinds of inflation, each impacting your portfolio in different ways. First off, we have inflation. A little bit of inflation, which is sustained increase in the price level of goods and services, is generally considered beneficial for the economy. But when prices start rising by more than about 2% a year, policymakers, bankers, and business people worry. Business managers, fearing their revenues will lag, often start raising prices, and workers demand raises, potentially sparking a dangerous upward cycle. The investments that have historically beaten high inflation include energy stocks, residential real estate held directly. Real estate investment trusts have provided much less inflation protection in previous cycles, and treasury inflation-protected securities, also known as TIPS. TIPS are federal IOUs that adjust their principal in line with the Consumer Price Index. Commodity funds also tend to beat inflation. For example, TCW Enhanced Commodity Strategy, symbol TGAVX, a member of the Kiplinger 25 list of our favorite actively managed mutual funds, returned 44% in the most recent period of rising inflation, from March 2021 through May 2022. Stocks in general can be a poor inflation hedge over short periods, but serve as potent protection for investors willing to buy and hold for more than 5 years, Tolette says. Fixed-rate bonds typically underperform during high inflation periods. Disinflation. When the rate at which prices are rising slows, you get disinflation, which is what we have right now. During disinflation, unlike in deflationary periods, prices still go up, sometimes painfully. The important distinction is that they are climbing more slowly than in the recent past. The good news is that a moderation of inflation, such as the cooling that the economy experienced in 2023, is typically a boon for investors because it bodes well for corporate profitability and thus stock prices. During these periods, investors are often rewarded for taking more risks, such as buying stock in growth-oriented companies. Since inflation started declining in July 2022, the growth-oriented NASDAQ Composite Index has handily beaten broader measures, such as the S&P 500, for example. Declining inflation also means that bonds bought during the more inflationary period now promise higher real or inflation-adjusted returns. Commodities, however, have done poorly in previous periods of disinflation. Next, we have no-flation. Periods of price stability, typically defined as times when consumer prices overall rise by no more than 2% a year, are sometimes referred to as no-flation. They tend to be a golden era for financial assets, says Gary Schlossberg, global strategist for the Wells Fargo Investment Institute. Think back to 2013 through 2019, when the consumer price index generally stayed below 2%. The S&P 500 notched gains in 6 of those 7 years and produced an above-average annual return of 13.6%. Price and economic stability create a good climate for just about all investments, but especially for riskier investments, such as growth-oriented and small company stocks, Schlossberg says. Next, we have deflation. The prices of some items, such as computers, gasoline, and seasonal foods, drop from time to time. But a generalized economy-wide drop in prices, or deflation, is rather rare. And that's good, because deflation can lead to a vicious cycle. A weakening economy leads to lower wages, layoffs, and decreased spending, which in turn usher in still lower prices and a further weakening of the economy. The U.S. has seen general deflation only twice in the past century, during the Great Depression in the early 1930s, and from March through October of 2009, partly overlapping what many call the Great Recession. In both periods, stock prices initially plunged much more than consumer prices and took years to recover. Volatile commodities also tend to suffer during deflation. Bonds that pay a fixed positive rate of interest offer positive real returns, barring a default. Next is stagflation. Inflation that coincides with stagnation in the job market and the economy, known as stagflation, causes truly challenging times for investors. Because economic weakness often prevents companies from raising prices enough to recover their costs, profits shrink, and stock returns fail to keep up with inflation. From 1973 through 1982, the annual inflation rate averaged 8.7%, and the average unemployment rate topped 7%. But the annual average return of the S&P 500 over that period was just 6.7%, meaning investors lost purchasing power. The economy escaped a stagflation scare during the pandemic. If you want to hedge against this type of painful economic malaise, Tolette says that your best bet is TIPS, which, if you hold to maturity, are guaranteed to return your investment and move up with inflation. Next article we have is on page 62, Understanding Your Adjusted Gross Income. Your eligibility for certain money-saving tax breaks depends all on your AGI. Basics by Ella Vincent. When it's time to calculate your tax bill, knowing your adjusted gross income is a crucial first step. If you file your tax return online, or have your tax preparer do it, you'll need your AGI from the previous tax year to prove your identity to the IRS. In addition, your AGI determines your eligibility for a range of tax breaks, which could lower your tax bill. Calculating and reducing your AGI. Your adjusted gross income is made up of income from various sources, including from your wages, self-employment income, interest from bank accounts, capital gains, dividends, rental income, and retirement plan distributions, minus adjustments, including interest on student loan payments, as well as contributions to a traditional IRA or 401k, and health savings accounts. You can find your AGI on line 11 of your 1040 tax form. Several money-saving tax credits, including the Child and Dependent Care Credit, as well as the credits for elderly and permanently disabled, are available to taxpayers whose AGI falls within certain thresholds. Your modified adjusted gross income, discussed below, is also tied to a range of tax breaks. For that reason, taking steps to keep your AGI below those limits could benefit you, now and in the future. Contributions to a traditional IRA will reduce your AGI on a dollar-for-dollar basis, and there's time to still use traditional IRA contributions to reduce your 2023 AGI. If you're not enrolled in a workplace retirement plan, you can deduct a contribution of up to $6,500 or $7,500 if you were 50 or older. You have until April 15th, 2024 to make your 2023 contribution. If you have a company retirement plan but earn less than a certain amount, you may also qualify to deduct all or part of your IRA contributions. For 2023, this deduction phases out for single taxpayers with AGI between $73,000 and $83,000, and for married couples who file jointly with AGI between $116,000 and $136,000. If one spouse is covered by a workplace plan but the other is not, the spouse who isn't covered can deduct the maximum contribution, as long as the couple's joint AGI doesn't exceed $218,000. A partial deduction is available if the couple's AGI is between $218,000 and $228,000. Contributing to a health savings account will also reduce your AGI, and you have until April 15th to set up and fund a health savings account for 2023. To qualify, you must have had an HSA-eligible insurance policy in 2023 that started no later than December 1st. The policy must have had a deductible of at least $1,500 for individual coverage or $3,000 for family coverage. You can contribute up to $3,850 to a 2023 HSA if you had single coverage or $7,750 if you had family coverage. You can also contribute an additional $1,000 if you are 55 or older in 2023. It's too late to contribute to your 2023 401k, but contributions you make this year will lower your 2024 AGI. You can stash up to $23,000 to your 401k or other employer-provided retirement plans in 2024, plus $7,500 in catch-up contributions if you're 50 or older. AGI versus MAGI. A long list of other tax breaks, including the Child Tax Credit, the American Opportunity Credit, and the Adoption Credit, are tied to your Modified Adjusted Gross Income, known as the MAGI. Your MAGI also determines your eligibility to contribute to a Roth IRA. MAGI is your AGI with a handful of deductions added back, including student loan interest, tax-exempt Social Security payments, and excluded interest on savings bonds. Since these add-backs are uncommon, many taxpayers' AGI and MAGI are the same. And that's it for this installment of the Magazine Rack. I've been reading the April edition of Kiplinger Personal Finance. I'm Michael Prinz. So long, and until next time.